Hey everybody, this episode of The Trap Draw is once again brought to you by Mizzen & Main. Be sure to check out mizzenandmain.com for their full selection of dress shirts. And if you do get anything, use the promo code TRAPDRAW. That's TRAPDRAW at mizzenandmain.com.
This is the spot for that Trap Draw.
And Ziploc that right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper. The absolute truth, yeah, no joke.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of The Trap Draw. I am Big Randy. As I always start things off, my first question is to you, Tron. What's up?
I'm stressed, dog. This recording our own podcast is, you thought we would have learned by now.
Mom and Dad are away.
Dad's not home.
They left us all the toys to play with. We're trying to figure it out. We have on the line the Merch Czar, live from Brooklyn, New York. Neil, how are you?
Gentlemen, I'm doing well. You know, Randy, your voice kind of got a little pep in your voice there once we heard that gunshot, which kind of got me jacked up. I mean, we're about an hour late getting started, so I didn't have any energy. I was kind of jebby, but now I'm starting to get back, you know, ready to give the people what they need, which is, you know, a little jolliness, I think.
Hey, Neil, I don't want to hear you complain anymore about the tardiness. We're mobile, agile, and hostile here in the Kill House.
We'll get it done. We're going to get it done. It's been a while, guys. When was the last? We did this, what, 2 years ago? Year and a half? Year and 9 months? Yeah. It was the Chateau Relaxo.
We were all in person down at the franchises in Atlanta.
No, that's true. I forgot about that one. I was talking about the one we did on Christmas Eve.
Oh, the infamous, I believe it was Christmas night. If I'm not mistaken.
Christmas night. It was the 25th.
Yeah. God, that would have been 2 years ago, two Christmases ago. But anyway, yeah. God, great to have you back. I feel like we got a lot to, you've been playing some golf, which we want to catch up on. You've also been not playing golf with us, namely in Scotland. So wanted to quickly get your thoughts on that. And then we threw out the bat signal. We have some good Twitter questions. We'll fire at you kind of towards the end. How does that sound?
God. Yeah, I'll try to duck. I can only imagine what the people have in store for me.
First and foremost, what's going on up in the big city?
Well, it's hot. As Randy would say, it's hot as shit up here. So I'm going to try to duck into the media tent, see if I can snag a free water. No, the free waters at Google have been holding me over. I fill up the fridge. Like, I usually bring like 6 or 8 home a night and just, you know, get the Dasanis loaded up in the fridge. My AC is back. It's working. So I keep it frosty here at my humble abode in Brooklyn. But things are good. I've been summer's kind of over and I'm on the grind. I played some good golf, did a little Euro vacation, and now I'm training for a boxing match in November. So I'm getting up early, getting to the gym, Mendez boxing. Throwing 1-2s, throwing hooks, throwing uppercuts, trying to get ready to go to fight somebody in the name of cancer research.
So tell us how you got set up with this boxing thing, when it's going down, where it's going down. Do you know who you're fighting yet? Give us the rundown.
So it's called Haymakers for Hope, and I think it's been around for like 8 or 9 years, but my buddy, good friend Evan Miller, the Mills, who you guys know and love. He did it a couple years ago. He's more of the boxing type, one of 6 kids, middle child, you know, got beat up by his older brothers, the sack master, Lou Miller. His older brother also did Haymakers. So, you know, but he's just kind of been in my ear about it. And I think I, you know, Phil, you and I were talking about it, you know, the man in the arena. I'm reading a good book about Teddy Roosevelt right now. And beginning of the year, I was thinking, I like to kind of have a physical goal. A couple years ago, it was trying to dunk a basketball, which forced
how'd
me to
end up. How'd that end up?
Well, I didn't dunk. It was Dunk Watch 2016. I didn't dunk in 2016, but I did dunk in 2017, in April of 2017.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so it ended up working out. I took like 45 tries when I did it. It wasn't pretty, but I did dunk at the Bay Club in San Francisco with a couple witnesses they can attest. But this year I figured, you know, I'm 29. I kind of got maybe one last shot at the title. You know, who knows?
Any concerns about getting the shit beat out of you?
Yes. Yes, there certainly are. I don't know who I'm fighting yet. It's probably, they kind of have us bucketed into like kind of some weight groups. I think it's, there's a couple of options. One dude was a runner up, two-time All-American wrestler at Virginia, runner up NCAA national
dude,
champion.
I'm just going to say this. You want no part of that guy.
I know.
No,
that guy's
out of that weight class.
That guy's, I think he's faced a few men in the arena, but hey, we'll see what happens.
I mean, just in general, like wrestlers are nuts.
Yeah,
like
I know.
Like, you know it from high. I don't know if the Marist School had a wrestling program. I'm assuming they did. But, dude, like, wrestling practice is – I always thought – yeah.
No, they're doing, like, the fire me carries, and they're doing a lot of bear crawling. And also, like, one of my goals is to, you know, get into, obviously, really good shape so that even if I'm not a great boxer, you know, I'll be the better conditioned one. That's going to be tough to do against a former wrestler because those guys know how to grind. The other options seems like it could be a couple of finance fuckboys, which I would obviously prefer. Yeah.
I'm definitely flying up for that.
So that's November 15th at the Hammerstein Ballroom. So yeah, you know, it's basically just kind of laying out the gauntlet for myself. I guess, you know, people probably don't really care, but I am making some custom merch. So be on the lookout for that in the next month or so. I haven't really started hammering the donation drum yet, but I'll probably be doing that as well. And I haven't picked a charity either. I don't have to. Haymakers will send like I'm trying to raise like 25K. They'll send the money to whatever charity I pick. So I'm thinking either breast cancer, because Tron, you know, it's like 19 years since our mom had breast cancer. So celebration of that. Or I was also thinking lung cancer, you know, just kind of with my affinity.
Like a preemptive
affinity,
thing.
Affinity for bogeys. I've been off the bogeys since you last saw me, Phil. So, you know, I'm fighting the good fight. You know,
that was like a week ago, I think.
it was actually like 9 days ago. So, but you know what? Usually if I get to 2 weeks, I'm good for a while. Like I lose the craving. So I'm coming up. Once I get to Sunday, I feel like I'll be good. But no, I don't have a problem.
Any thought to donate the money to a CTE research charity? I mean, just to kind of close the circle on all this.
Does it have to be cancer?
It has to be cancer.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, but I'm wearing headgear, so I know where you're going with that. And I resent it. You know,
well, Peg and the franchise are not happy. We're going to a wedding the following day in Cincinnati, and Neil, hopefully he's got black eyes and he's all bruised and battered and stuff for the wedding. Peg's not happy.
If you fight the wrestler, for sure.
Well, yeah, you know, we're just going to have to see how this unfolds, but that's kind of the point, right? Like,
I feel like you fighting the wrestler is going to be like David Lingmerth. Like, it's just some kind of short, squat, like really core strength guy. Just a power plant.
That guy's just going to beat up on your body.
You know, he could, you know, but I got a good trainer. I will say that. Like, I've picked up a lot. I've been doing about a month. I'm going every day at 6 a.m. So, you know, I'm just going to grind, guys, and we'll see what happens. I feel pretty good. So, you know, I appreciate your concern both on the CTE front and on my matchup. I should know by next week. So I'll keep you guys posted.
Okay.
But yeah, man, we're going to get in the ring. That's where we're at here. So anyway, I'm looking forward to being one of the lowest downloaded trap draws. But for any of those brave souls out there that want to learn more, I'll probably start, you know, keeping a little running weekly journal here in the next couple weeks.
Well, hey, well, you know, looking forward to following along, and it was good to introduce the people to your quest here.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure there'll be a few listeners that I know. I want to get some of that boxing merch.
Yeah, some of it's just going to be like limited edition NLU gear that has like no, you wouldn't even know it's about boxing, but all the proceeds are going to go to cancer research. So, hey, how about it? there you have it.
So I think we mentioned it briefly earlier, but while we were in Scotland, back in, when were we in Scotland, July?
Like mid-July.
Kind of right when you were amping up with this boxing stuff, you played a little golf back in the New York area.
I did. I played a few. So I played Bethpage, black, and got ejected. Force carries everywhere. And it was really hot. It's just a tough course.
Was it a fun course?
Well, I'd like to play it again because I tried to bully the golf course. Like, I hit a lot of drivers and probably didn't even need to, even though we played it from the tips. And then, like, if you just don't hit the fairway, like, you can't score. Like, you can't. It's ridiculous how, like, penal the rough is. And, like, I think there's, like, three holes where the fairway and the greens connect. So it's just, like forced carries over rough between the fairway and the green or, like, bunkers. And they're, most of the approaches are uphill. So it's just, like, it wears on you over time. So it's Bethpage, which is a state park, and like, you know, you go up and we got a lottery spot. So got to tee off at like 11 a.m. so no big deal. We didn't have to like sleep in the car or anything, which is nice. I also love the check in. Like, the guys are like no nonsense dudes. Like, I almost felt like I was kind of like placing a bet at a racetrack or something. They're like behind the glass and there's like absolutely no tips, you know, like state employees cannot be tipped at all. It's just like very like it's just a really funny environment.
And then the guy's giving you a wink wink, like, yo, like, that's not serious. Like,
this guy we had was like very much by the book, and like I didn't have a New York ID, and just, you know, there was not gonna be like, I was like, oh, but I live in New York. He's like, I don't care. You know, he's like, okay, sick. So you know,
is
rules
the sleeping
rules.
In your car thing still is that still a thing?
Yeah, because a lot of people, I don't think it's either they don't show up for the tee times or they don't, like what you guys did with St. Andrews. Like, I guess they just have openings, you know, like just randomly throughout the day. So people just hang around. So you go from that, and then later on, like a couple days later, I played Liberty National. Oh, I guess it was the other way around. I played Liberty National during the week, and then I played Bethpage the weekend. And so Liberty National is like, we took the ferry over from Lower Manhattan, which is great. I went, played with a bunch of guys I play softball with. A couple of them are members. And so they had us out. Nice to host us out there. Guys, the course is beautiful. It's beautiful. But I would liken it, like Tron, I probably said this to you, it's like a pair of fake tits. It looks great. They feel great, but you're just
kind of voluptuous. There's some mounding.
This is really well manicured. This looks good. Looks great. It photographs tremendously well, right? Very, very well. But it's just like, kind of like, it's just like, it's not really supposed to be there. And it's also, like, when I was out there, I was kind of like, damn, this is kind of a shame. Like, it's so unbelievable views of the city, so close to the city. And it's like, felt like there were probably three or four groups on the course on a, you know, beautiful, I think it was like a Wednesday evening, which is like, you know, not, it's like, damn, it kind of stinks, you know? Like, I wish more people could enjoy that.
Was it like, were there memorable holes?
Yeah, like the 14th, the par three with this, like, panorama view. And 13th, there's a par 5 13th over water that's really cool. There was definitely some interesting holes. The 18th is a big cape, very, very capey, into the clubhouse, which looks like, you know, futuristic spaceship with the city in the background. And then the locker room is funny. It's like kind of one of those places where, like, the name tags are really big on the lockers. You know what I mean? It's like Justin Timberlake, Gary Cohn, like, oh, sick. Like, so I kind of, cause you know, you go to other clubs and it's like, there's no names on the lockers that are really right. Exclusive. So it's just kind of like a funny vibe there.
Yeah. Right? It says a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it was good. They had great comfort stations.
That was going to be my next question.
Tremendous comfort stations.
This sounds like a Fazio on like HGH.
Yeah, you could probably, that'd probably be a good way to look at it. A lot of waterfalls, a lot of water features,
containment, like creeks. Rounding.
Yeah. Like a lot of creeks, a lot of runoff areas behind the greens. The greens are very tricky.
And I guess before we go any farther with this, like I think we need to say that you are the loudest voice in the NLU stable of like, whenever we get talking about golf course architecture, you're like, fuck this, man.
Yeah, I try to like appreciate it. Like I played Sleepy Hollow last weekend, which was awesome. And I kind of understand like, you know, why like that's a classic course after playing it. But it's more because I like enjoyed the course, not because the Redan and Levin stuff just kind of wears me out a little bit.
Well, even after your trip over to Spain and France and to Biarritz specifically?
To the OG Biarritz, Biarritz 1.0.
Yeah.
Went there and didn't go to the Biarritz.
Well, I think that I don't think they named it Biarritz because of the golf course there. I think they named it Biarritz because of the way the town sits in like a valley between the mountains.
Very interesting.
Like there's two like lighthouses.
I'm going to fact check here. I'm going to look that up.
Well, I don't know. I would like you to fact check that because there is a golf course in Biarritz and it seemed like it was like pretty old school, but it didn't seem like, I didn't see anything about like, oh, like.
No, Biarritz Golf Club, par 3, third hole, is dubbed the Chasm. Willie Dunn Jr. designed it. So, all right. So you went all the way over to Biarritz to the, like what, how was that trip?
I went to Barcelona for a wedding with my girlfriend, Lauren. And we went to the wedding was in a nice little beach town about an hour outside of Barcelona. And then we decided to go to Barcelona. And then we went to, took a train to Madrid for a day. And then we went up to the Basque region and into France, into Biarritz, because it's like a surf town that Lauren had been to, I don't know, a couple years ago. She'd say that and did some surfing. Did a little motorbiking through the hills, tagged a few, few things in San Sebastian, you know, left some NLU behind, which is good.
The food scene in San Sebastian was good.
Oh yeah. The pinchos, the jamon, the jams, delicious. The food, I think, Spain has my vote over France. Although I did smoke a few heaters in France, which was, I tried to smoke them really long and slow after dinner. Like the French do.
Between your second and third fingers?
Yeah, exactly. And I had a bunch of chocolate croissants. I love chocolate croissants. That's one thing that I do like about the French culture. I used to not like croissants when I was a kid, but now I like the croissant but only the chocolate, because the chocolate's got like the light fluffy thing, but it's got the chocolate kick to it, which is, I like that.
Just a nice little surprise in there.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the questions that, you know, I floated it out on Twitter that we were having you on tonight. One of the questions was, you know, hey, what's Neil's ranking of domestic cigarettes? And I'm going to take that a step farther and say, out of the countries you've been to here, between Australia, France, Spain, Canada, US here in the last year or so, who has the best cigarettes?
Oh, well, I mean, it's kind of like the globalists run everything, right? So like Philip Morris they just throw a different label on the international ones. It's not like you're, other than I did down in Australia, the Bond Street ones were very harsh. The local ones in Australia were serious, but you know, like I'm kind of soft. I smoke Parliament Lights when I do, because I do care about my lungs and it is a bad habit. So I'd say, you know, Camels, sometimes when you're abroad, make you feel a little bit more exotic. You know, you see the Camel on the logo, you're like, oh man, like Turkish Golds, like I'm the kid, I'm the kid. But really, the invisible Masons or whoever runs Philip Morris is, they're just kind of running the world. It's a big conglomerate. Yeah, it's a big conglomerate.
Do you remember when the franchise used to come back from Canada?
Yeah, he had the pack of reds once.
Dumaurier, Dumaurier's. Yeah, he was like, oh God, these things are so
good.
Those
were heavy. Those were heavy. You know what I will say this? A lot of I respect about the Euros is a lot of them are smoking, they're rolling their own cigs.
They roll their own stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like they got the bag, they're rolling them up on their own, throwing a little filter in the end, which is the way to do it. I guess it's probably a little bit better for you and you know, it makes you look cooler too. So there you have it.
You know what you're putting in your body, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So no golf on the Euro trip.
No, I did. Lauren, we thought about playing one night, but you know, sometimes when you get away, like we talk a lot of golf. We watch a lot of golf. I kind of just felt like hanging out and like getting off the grid for a while. Did some reading, did some working out, did some eating and some sightseeing. So it was good. And some surfing. I got dominated by the Atlantic. The one thing I will say is like the coast of France, the west coast down through like the north coast of Spain, it reminds you a lot of like the California coast, like Monterey, Carmel. Yeah, really rugged. And like it has the same light, you know, because I guess they're both on the west coast, and the Atlantic is like really heavy surf, which I didn't really expect. Well, but they got the same kind of
like calm, you know, like Pacific's kind of,
it does, man. That's wild.
That's wild.
That's wild, John. I think Vasco, who was it? Pizarro? Vasco da Gama named it?
I don't know, man. You know, I would have gone with Amerigo Vespucci, but
he came over.
No, he was the guy that just found the continent. Or was it right. Cortez, the big homie?
So I think part of it's just
well, that's neither here nor there, I guess.
Cortez was a bad hombre, by the way.
Yeah, he was the baddest hombre. I tried to paddle out on like a foam board because they're easy to get up on, and just couldn't. You know, you can't duck dive those. You can't go in the waves on those. So I was getting so frustrated, getting absolutely
pitted,
mega pitted. I just I couldn't get out past the breakers, bro. I was struggling. But it was good. I did that. I got up on a couple waves. But it was probably, it could have been a more successful surf sesh. I could have been more dialed.
Any John Rahm discussions while you were over there? That's kind of where he was from, or where he's from. That
is
area
he?
Of Spain. Yeah, he's from the Basque country.
No, I didn't really talk a lot of golf with anyone. You know, I got interest outside the game. Sean, I don't know what you want from me. You know, I'm
trying to get out there. Question,
I will say this though. I am looking forward to some Opus Dei Ryder Cup matches. So like Bubba, Bryson,
yeah,
Lord
explain,
Tyrell.
Explain
Hatton,
the Opus Dei.
Rahm
to the folks.
So Opus Dei are the guys that really self-loathe, like visibly. You know, they run hot. And it's like the guys from the Da Vinci Code, the guy with the white hair, the monk that like ties like the chains around his legs as penance and makes himself bleed. And so they're just like, you know, they hit a bad shot and they're just like flagellating or whatever, like whipping themselves. And Rahm and Hatton are probably the two biggest culprits on the Euro side. And then Bubba's so, obviously.
Yeah, it's like top five worldwide on the Opus Dei.
I'd say Rahm is definitely, like, he's got to be one or two. And then, but I don't know if Bubba is because he's usually getting mad at someone else. So the penance isn't directed his way. I think Bryson, like, with that, like, range outburst is, definitely an Opus Dei.
I saw it firsthand at Harbortown. This year, I was standing there with Worldwide West and Kenny Goulet from Greenville Country Club, and standing there on the range, and like he's got his whole entourage of five or six guys out there, and he's like berating himself. Like everybody's just standing there looking on. It was wild. It was I couldn't look away, man. It was.
Isn't that awesome? I think it's the best.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, everybody knows that guy they played with that. They get mad in a specific way where they're just so self-loathing. You're like, damn.
It's our buddy. Like, well, we all know Maraca. I mean,
yeah,
yes,
that's where
like
he.
Maybe
he
three
would,
listeners
he would,
will know.
He would hit it. He did it like
the background.
Dead left and
yeah.
Randy good.
So we would take this like Michigan trip every year, every summer.
So my brother-in-law and a group of like it started out as I think eight. I think it's up to like 16 now. We'd go up to Northern Michigan, just kind of like a Ryder Cup style match. Well, anyway, Joe, who, by the way, used to be my boss when I worked for Ernst & Young out of college.
Did not know that.
Yeah, which was another little wrinkle.
So was he the one that told you you couldn't wear basketball shorts to the client site?
Yeah, he was my senior manager on that engagement. It was a Saturday of like Martin Luther King week, and like there was nobody in the office.
You wear a polo shirt with like basketball
with
shorts?
Basketball shorts, yeah. But anyway, Joe played at Methodist, I don't know, college or university, the D3 school down in North Carolina, which is like a golf powerhouse, D3. And he was like a total stick. But now, you know, like 15 years removed or whatever it is, he battles. Like he's like the best range player. If you look at him on the practice range, you're like, that guy's a scratch easy. But there's just a disconnect. He's got like the driver yips, or he just has the biggest misses. And he just, God, he beats himself up. Like, come on, Joe.
No.
And he never cusses at himself, though.
Joe, you are so bad.
You are so bad.
You don't even deserve to play the game.
And the other funny part
so
is
like inward focus.
Yeah, yeah. He never cusses at himself. And then the other funny part is he never, like, he's got a preternatural ability to find his golf ball. Like in the deepest, thickest woods. Like, got it.
And like no funny business. Like he's legitimately finding the ball.
Yeah, and he counts his strokes and everything, but God, he's fun to play with.
He's like 300 yards in the woods.
Got it. Joe, you don't deserve to play this game.
You stink.
And that's what like that. It's not. So it's not people. Opus Dei isn't people like getting mad at the crowd. So I guess it's not as much Bubba. It's more like people that are just like muttering under their breath to themselves, which is Rom. Like Rom is just always like freaking out on himself quietly, you know? So you just see him like tying that contraption like tighter around his leg, you know? It's just like he's wearing the white pants and you think the blood is just going to start dripping.
So we've got Rom, Hatton, Bryson.
Rom and Hatton for sure. I'd say
Hatton. Did you catch Hatton's at the on the 72nd hole? This past weekend at Ridgewood?
No, I didn't, but I got some of it at Shinnecock. I fought him for a few holes, and he's just like, you guys just like steaming under the surface. He's stewing a little bit.
He missed this like 8-footer for birdie on 18 on Sunday, and he shot like 68 or something. Like he had a pretty good round, and he just started berating himself. Just all while his playing partner putted out. The camera stayed on him. The announcers, I think, were a little freaked out.
I mean, we're open to suggestions from the folks on if you see Opus Dei, say something. You know, you kind of want to
identify him. Yeah.
Identify him, you know, because it's like
build out the cult.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like Alex Levy might be on that spectrum when he's not playing well. But we can keep an eye out for that.
Hey, guys. It's Neil, the guest. I'm doing the ad read as well. It's actually an ad riff for Mizzen & Main. I guess it makes sense because I've been wearing the shirts for a while, probably like 3 years since my mom got them for me because I had really bad pit stains when I was in like middle school and high school. And I tried a lot of stuff like wearing undershirts, but that just like made the pit stain like really bad. Or like no undershirt, but that would make like sweat drip, which was no good either. And then, you know, you try a bunch of different deodorants out. Anyway, these shirts are great. The material is very much a sweat wicking material. So I'd recommend them. And I've got 4 in my closet that I paid for. So MinnesotaMaine.com, promo code TRAPDRAW. And you can get a little discount on those shirts. All right, back to the pod with yours truly.
So Neil, getting back to your golf, you played kind of the other end of the spectrum in New York this summer too.
I did. I played Flushing Meadow pitch and putt, which is as far to the other end of the spectrum as you can get, and I love that place. It's 18-hole par 3. You can play till 1 a.m. It's all lit. It's right behind the Met Stadium in Flushing Meadows. and there's just some characters out there. So anybody that's in the New York area, I would highly recommend either going out there with some cold beers and some buddies, or it's also probably a good like third date spot, you know, instead of going like play putt-putt, or like I'd much rather go there than go to like the driving range at like Chelsea Piers. You know, if it's a subway ride either way, it's like that's a much, because it's like one, it's better for your game. It feels more like real golf. It's just like much more stimulating to do pitch and putt.
You're producing a little project on it too, right?
Yeah, it is.
Just to give a little.
It's a work in progress tease. For sure.
Okay.
I got
to get on my horse. You had some technical challenges?
Well, yeah, no, I just got a lot.
You're on our asses about technical challenges.
Yeah.
No, that's not really it. I'm fucking busy, man. You know, I'm running a fucking global merch operation. I'm trying not to get my ass kicked in November. You know, I'm trying to run around and do special projects with the big guy. You know, going to.
Hey, yeah, not yet. Keep that holstered there, Captain.
Yeah, Randy and Neil have been working on this special project. We can't talk about it.
No, it'll probably be dropping.
It'll be dropping
fairly soon. But definitely in September.
But here's the thing. So the Flushing Meadow thing got me onto the fact that like there's a bunch of other pitch and putts and like par three courses in the New York area. There's one called like I think Skyway, which is in New Jersey, like right like near Hoboken. It's supposed to be kind of cool. And then there's like the mecca of pitch and putts, which is Robert Moses State Park, which is out on Long Island. It's like right. It's like on the coast, on this like barrier island in Long Island. And apparently, this guy at Flushing Meadow is telling me like, "Oh, dude, it's like you don't understand, man. It's like it's the ultimate." That's what he kept saying. And I was like, "He's like, you got to go. Like this place is nothing compared to that place, and, you know." But this is on the pitch and putt scale, right? Like,
yeah.
So I can't wait to get out there and check that spot out. And because all you got to do is you bring one club, a wedge, and a putter, and you just walk around. And have a backpack, and you just like it's awesome. It's awesome.
It might be a like it might technically be a par three. There's some cool one in Buffalo. If you're ever on the outside of the state, actually, it was Kevin Price's like hometown, like his home track.
Well, I would love to hear about like just the pitch and putt circuit across the U.S. Like that might be an onion I start peeling back because I just think it's like you get a like to the guy out there that the starter. He was a New York City cop for like 30 years on like the Harlem beat. He's also the lead singer of a Rolling Stones cover band called the Stony Rollers. And the guy wears like two knee braces when he's playing. They're out there playing like skin games. On the pitch and putt. They're like gambling heavy. And it was great. Like the characters are phenomenal. So I can't wait to... It's open in the winter too, so I can go. You can go year round. Like he's like, anytime there's not snow out here, like we're out here basically. So it's like an opportunity to like play golf in New York in the winter too.
Yeah. Well, dude, when you were down here, a couple weeks ago for kind of NLU, you know, summer meetings, and I was blown away. You picked up like 50 yards.
I think that's – so at Sleepy Hollow over the weekend, I hit 14 fairways, which is the first time I think I've ever done that.
And is that all of them?
That was all of them. And I shot at 81, which is not good.
That sounds like me growing up.
Man. How many greens did you hit?
I'd say, probably half of them. I three-putted. I had several three-putts. And then I had a really bad shank, 9-iron on 11 – it cost me a triple. Like I shanked it out. I just missed it. Like it was like Hosel adjacent. Kind of like, I don't know.
Big guy gets Hosel adjacent.
Like, you know, it kind of one of those ones that rattles you. Like you're having a great round. You're like, whoa, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
But I was able to right the ship and brought it in with a, I birdied the punch bowl. They have an epic punch bowl.
That's what I was just, the thumbnail? Is that? Or
no,
the
16th is the short par three, which is the thumbprint looking over the Hudson, which is like as good as advertised.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
The hole before it is so good. It's this like really, really long par four punch bowl, but it's like, you know, it's probably like 500 yard par four, but it doesn't really matter because like you can shave off 60 yards because it's just a giant, like basically drop off cliff to the green. So you can just run one up, you know, and like, or you can play it like off the, back punch bowl, but then there's like a heavy drop off if you fly the punch bowl. So it was just the punch bowl hole was like my favorite. I thought that was really cool. There were a lot of interesting holes out there, though.
Yeah, now you're sounding all uppity,
like a template fuckboy.
No, I felt
disgusting.
It was more. Yeah, you're right. I stink. damn it. I don't know. The punch bowl is easy though because it's like it's almost like a freaking theme park ride. Like it's
right.
Such a jolly hole. But there's all these other ones where it's like they make it up names, like oh the Dell or the Levin. Like it's like okay, the green sloping front to back. That's not a template hole. That's just the green sloping. Like I don't know. It just sometimes it frustrates me because it's like we're getting a little bit too niche.
Maybe yeah. Okay.
There's a place for the architecture. I get it. I'm trying to appreciate it. It's kind of like I'm not a wine drinker, right? Like I like cold beer because I like the taste of cold beer. And I don't, you know, I probably could have the palate for wine, but it just doesn't really appeal to me to get that nitty gritty with it.
Listen, I don't think we're going to settle, you know, anything here. And quite honestly, I think you said it best. There's room for everybody and everything. And I think that's the best way. So,
I think someone's love of architecture doesn't, as long as it doesn't impede upon your, you know, I think that's why I became to fever pitch it at the PGA this year with like Bell Reeve. Cause it was like, oh, this tournament's going to suck. And, like I was guilty of it probably more than anybody, but you know, it was like, hey, like it was impeding upon other people's enjoyment of the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, maybe next time I'll just keep my mouth shut a little bit more.
I will say I was able to go out there to this, you know, CB McDonald masterpiece and it probably enjoy it because I did know a little something about architecture. So you're like, oh, cool. So this is like actually what that looks like.
Yeah.
So that's good too. I get it. Like I'm knowledge is a good thing.
To each their own. I'd never tell anybody what to enjoy or how to,
but
how
that place is great. Cause it's an inland course, but it has these really, really nice views of the Hudson Valley. And then it's got the history. It was like Vanderbilt's daughter's mansion and estate that they turned into a golf course. So it's got all this like robber baron Gilded Age history to it. So it's just like, you know, it's got like mega bones. It doesn't feel too private, but it's still, you know, it's still pretty uppity, which is a good, you know, sometimes that's kind of a good combo. And they have great infrastructure. The bridges were awesome.
I know you played Somerset Hills this summer too.
I did not. I have not played. I played Morris County Country Club.
Oh, Morris County. You had 10 rounds between Morris County and Sleepy Hollow. How are you dividing them? Actually, no, 10 rounds between Bethpage, Sleepy Hollow, Morris County, and Liberty National. And you can say like 8 times at Sleepy Hollow if you want.
I'd say like 5 at Sleepy Hollow. I'd say 1 at Liberty National. And I'd say, no, I'd say 6 at Sleepy Hollow, 1 at Liberty National, and 3 at Bethpage. I don't need to play Morris County. No offense to Morris County. No offense to anybody.
Yeah.
But like you're kind of getting what you need at Sleepy Hollow with like, instead of just like you're getting a better version of Morris County, basically.
Well, cool. Hollow.
Sick.
Sick. I've never played any of them. Well, maybe we should get into some Twitter questions. And who would be your announcer and who would be your dream analyst for the Tiger Phil pay-per-view match?
Ooh. I don't know actually, because does it have to be golf guys? Like,
that's the best part. Like,
it doesn't. It could be anybody.
Open it up, man.
By the way, this is from a Furley sports fan.
Then obviously, Gruden is one of them, and
okay,
I'd love
so
to
Gruden's
have.
Gruden's your analyst.
Who's
your play-by-play guy?
Tirico, man, come on.
Okay, yeah, I mean that's works great. Yeah,
like
I think that'd be
hysterical
chops.
Because I think like Tirico could keep it, like I'd actually get some value from the telecast, and then Gruden would just like, I'll tell you what, man, and he'd tell me something that's completely unrelated to golf. But you know what I think golf should be doing is like what the guys do, like the analysts in football when they're like drawn on the screen. Like, how come when they show me the blimp shot, I'd love to see, like, you know, somebody who has like knowledge of the course, like, you want to hit it here and like throw an
drawing
X.
Drawing it up on the television.
Yeah, draw, like, why aren't you drawing it up for me? Instead of just showing, like, I'm watching.
Maybe they need Mike Fratello.
I'm watching Bizarre it. I'm falling the asleep. I'm falling asleep watching the tournament and this weekend. Didn't make it out to Northern Jersey.
Yeah, we're delving into, you're talking about template holes.
Hold on a second. Hold
you're
on a second.
You're talking about, you're make. Bitching about the coverage.
No, you got McCord.
You sound
you
like
McCord.
All the stuff that we get lambasted for on a weekly basis here.
No, I'm not just complaining about it. I'm trying to offer a solution here. One of them is they showed this blimp shot for like, I don't know, 30 seconds at least of just this hole, this Tillinghast hole with all these bunkers. And McCord's like, look at all those bunkers. Look at them. There's 9 of them. Let's count them. Did I get it right? Let's count them up. 1, 2, 3. Ah, ha, ha. You know, and like he just counts up 9 bunkers. And it's like, why don't you just start fucking circling them or 1, 2, you know, like draw on the fucking screen.
Like the too many men on the field.
Do something to entertain me with the blimp shot. Don't just show me this generic, bland blimp shot of the course. I don't understand it. It's like these guys. It's so simple. Like that would add a lot. I think just some like really rudimentary graphics with a pen. So
I think one thing I was reflecting on this a couple months ago when the Tour de France was going on. And actually, when it was announced that Pete Bevacqua was the PGA guy was going to NBC, and I'm like, hey, all right, NBC covers the Tour de France and they own Golf Channel, so why don't they, like, I would almost say cover golf more like the Tour de France, you know, where like you have camera guys out there, you like in the Tour de France you have the guys on the motorcycles, you have helicopters. You're tracking the Peloton, all that shit, right?
Like, well, they're not moving that fast. Why do you need a motorcycle? They have guys out there with cameras.
Just like they should send out like 40 guys together on a golf course Peloton.
No,
that'd be sick.
Well, that would be sick. But I wasn't. But just take something like and you have Bob Roll and. The other dudes in the studio there.
Those guys are the best too.
And they're just talking through everything and they're like, you know, and it's like rapid fire and you're always seeing action and it's like, hey,
no,
like why
true.
Like how is the Tour de France, like how is that a profitable venture to
That's such a good telecast too.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
And there's not, you know, and hey, this 15 minutes is sponsored by
right,
you know, so and so hemorrhoid ointment, you know, like because it's all like bikers and stuff. Why can't golf morph like take some lessons from the Tour de France?
Well, and they do such a good job of giving context to, because a lot of it is just guys like
it's like 80% of people are guys that don't know shit about it and they're just watching.
Exactly, yeah. They give a great context on the venue, the larger race, individual guys, you know, their strengths, their weaknesses, the team aspect, which I don't know how the team aspect transitions to golf, but it's like 90% of that telecast is just kind of boring guys riding bikes, but they make it entertaining.
You're learning something the entire time.
Right.
Whether it's, hey, like we're going through this village right now, this
right.
is where this happened.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like they got the King of the Mountains thing. All
right. Right.
You
know. Right. No, that's what I was saying. I don't mean
but
it's like boring.
They
as a
do
viewer.
Have
like,
it going
it
for them. They have it going for them, though, that it's like these guys are constantly moving at like 40 miles an hour. So it just adds this element of like, oh my God, they're going so fast. Look at that big mass of humans that could crash at any moment. Whereas
true.
Golf, it doesn't really have that energy or pace. Which probably makes it hard.
Right. But I think they create some of that because, like I said, there are long stretches in the Tour de France where like nobody's really doing anything.
Yeah, and part of it too is like there's you know, there's 100 and or really at one point there's 60 or 70 guys on the course at any given time. Somebody's hitting one off the planet every.
Well, do you know what else makes the Tour de France more entertaining? Are the fans just
the
being
fans on the
rowdy
side
as
on the
smoke bombs this year? Like
yeah. to the roads, they're crazy.
I mean, yeah, maybe if golf just let the gallery just go completely bananas, that that adds some entertainment as well. All right, next question here. We got a few more, and then we gotta get going. At Grant McGalliard asked, "What's the closest you've come, Neil, to the mythical perfect bogey?"
God, that's such a good question. The big homie asks a lot of good questions.
It's gotta be Barnbugle, right?
Barnbugle was close. It really was. It was close. I mean, the perfect bogey comes from a guy I used to work with, Chance Tidyman, back in the day in San Francisco. Chance is like, I don't know, probably like 45 now.
It sounds like an alias.
And we were both on the sales team. I was like the youngest guy on the sales team. He was like the oldest guy at this like really disruptive startup that is no longer in business. So you can imagine we were selling some really valuable stuff. Anyway, we'd joke around about the perfect bogey all the time. And, you know, it usually would have to include like some type of water feature. Sunset's always a bonus. No wind, like not having wind, because wind makes the bogey go quicker. So you don't want wind. So that would be like one of the only drawbacks to the one in Barnbugle. Was probably a little windy.
We caught a pretty calm day down there, though.
I remember I had one close to sunset at the end of Jazz Fest like 4 years ago with Mills, listening to Trombone Shorty close it out, just like the end of an epic weekend. That, you know, no wind, just nice. It wasn't too hot, and it was just
was
like,
that down in New Orleans
now? Yes, exactly. You know, we're vibing. Yeah, maybe vibing on some other stuff too, you know. Good music. It was great. It was like, it was the perfect bug. So all right, something like that.
All right, let's see here. Who's the best Ivy League football player that you played against?
Who's that from?
From Jason YYC.
That people would know, probably I think his name was Jeff Matthews. He played QB at Cornell. He was a freshman I think he's a freshman my senior year. He threw for like 540 yards on us and like 5 TDs. He played backup. He was backup for the Falcons the year they were on the Hard Knocks. Guy could sling the P. Actually, that's an easy question. I got stiff-armed so badly by Kyle Jusic, the Harvard tight end, now tight end for San Francisco 49ers. That's an easy question.
They hate him like more than any fullbacks ever.
Yeah, he's like the H-back.
Yeah,
he's like the definition of the H-back.
The mega H-back.
So it was. I remember this vividly. It was zero coverage. We're playing at home. It's my senior year. Zero coverage meaning there's no safety help over the top. So you're playing inside. So you don't get beat over the middle. And he runs like a real quick out. And like I was probably like playing off a little bit too much. And like they just dumped it to him in the flats. And I came up to like, you know, just make a routine tackle. And your boy just put the fucking stiffy on me right to the grill. And then he goes like 40 yards down the sideline. And then my buddy, Ryan Murphy, like misses a goal line tackle. He like hurdles them for a touchdown. It was like, oh my God, that's brutal.
How old was Jusic at this time?
I think he was a junior or a senior. Okay. He was at the same age, I think.
You played better players in high school than you did college for the most part.
Yeah, Eric Berry in high school was probably the best. And then yeah, I'd say Eric Berry is probably the best player.
All right. At JD Wilson 1747 wants to know, who do you think is the alpha of the Jacks Beach NLU crew?
Jesus. I mean, who's the greller?
Who's the greller?
I don't know. I mean, you guys are all stunting down there. I think it's kind of like, you know, that game when you go to the Braves game, it's like the Home Depot tools are like racing like around the bases, like in between innings. It's like the hammer is out in front.
The hammer always gets out in front.
And then the saw comes storming from behind. And then the screwdriver comes out. Or like in New York, I was at the Yankees game last year. They used like the subway train. It's like the 6. No, it's the 1. No, it's the 7. Ah. And like, I think that's how the alpha contest is going in the kill house right now.
On that subject,
well, it's kind of a Schrodinger's cat situation. Maybe we're all the alpha and we're all not the alpha.
Well, I think we're all not the alpha because the lax bros across the street are the real alphas.
Yeah,
no, the true. Guy across like, the street.
Whenever they want to be, they're the real alpha.
Oh, Buffin is Lotus. Like, Lotus guy is definitely the alpha.
Dude, he works his speedboat and actually his Jeep Wrangler too. He buffs them all.
So just for the folks listening at home, this guy, like, if you can imagine the Gordon Bombay house on the beach from
that's a great illusion.
From D2, the Mighty Ducks, when they go out to LA for the Junior Goodwill Games. And like Bombay's he's rollerblading kind of there, like Santa Monica Beach or Manhattan Beach, I'm not sure where it is in LA, but it's kind of that modern style house. And it's this guy, and he's always out there shirtless, and he's probably
mid to
late 40s.
Yeah,
and he's a little bit pudgy, but he's got some muscle, but he's got like some subcutaneous fat.
Yeah,
and he's just out. He's always out there every Saturday. He's buffing his Lotus out there. He's waxing.
And then right across the street from him are the lax.
Or maybe Randall. Maybe it's the mailman.
Oh, Bill.
Yeah, it sounds like Bill's kind of like big time.
Bill the Mill. Yeah. I always say, I think I like Bill a lot more than Bill likes me.
You've seen a lot of guys come and go. He's not cheap with his emotion. He's not just going to let
Randy
you in.
He keeps trying to give Bill like NLU bucket hats.
Because he wears a big safari bucket.
I think Bill is like, hey, I got to wear the I got my USPS bucket. Stuff.
Yeah, know? He's keeping it true to the USPS.
So, he doesn't take bribes. He's a government employee, just like the best black guys.
All right, one more question each here, and then we got a wrap.
Kevin Igo, how are the spas down in Jax? Anything close to the ambient vibes of the Chateau Relaxo refuge out in Monterey?
So I can speak to one spot. There's a foot massage joint that I thought was subpar.
In Jax?
In Jax, yeah. Thrill turned me on to it. It's right over by the
Travis Hill, the
Thrill Hill
managing editor of the Golfers Journal.
Tron, it's off of it's by the sushi place we went to that one time.
Saki House?
Yeah, I think it's right in there. Anyway, it's like what I didn't like about it was not enough pressure, and it was like a big room, and there's like 20 people getting their feet massaged in like this big like airy room, which is like, that's okay.
Full of bad bitches.
Yeah. But I'd rather have like a little bit more like cubicle style, you know, so I can zone out a little easier. But I got a spot on 8th Street in New York on 6th Ave and 8th Street called like Fundong or Fangdu. And,
Fundong.
It's like, well, there's a sign right on the door that says no sexual favors. Don't even ask. So it's not like that kind of joint. But it's $25 for an hour foot massage, and these guys in there just go ham on the reflexology, like, you know, squeezing the calves, doing the Achilles, they're grinding. Because I got some like plantar fasciitis, so
I've been exploring
the space a little bit. So
what was the thing that you and Randy were talking about when you were down here? I think you were talking about
the commission,
yeah.
Getting rolfed. Yeah. Like the super intense, yeah. It's kind of like, it's like getting yourself Opus Dei'd by somebody. Like they just essentially beat you up to the point where like it's supposed to feel good.
Right?
Yeah. But then we were like reading up on it, and somebody called it like quackery. Well, somebody called it quackery. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to check that out. I'm a connoisseur.
Yeah. I had a kind of very eccentric college professor. He used to always get rolfed, and he loved it. He was like,
I just think Mark Rolfing.
It's like, it's the most painful thing you'll ever experience, but it feels so good.
I go pretty hard on the Google massage scene too.
That's scummy.
I was able to pedal like some kind of like, they did some, you know, stupid contest about something like 6 months ago, and I was able to like get my payment and massage points. So I've been getting like, I think I've had 10 massages in the past year.
At
Big Search. No, I've never done it. I should try it out.
All right, Neil, last question, and this is one we can all kind of answer. It's from Burko Stefko. Who are our PGA Euro Tour doppelgangers? So essentially, who's your pro golf doppelganger? I assume you mean looks, dude, but we can maybe do looks or personality.
Somebody sent in, I've got two. Somebody sent in a picture of Bo Hostler, which really rattled me because it kind of looked like me. And I was like, fuck, man. Like, I can't even argue.
That splotchy beard and shit.
Yeah, I was like, shit. And then the guy in the bag was like Tron with the bucket hat on. Like, we got to dig that picture up. It was fucking perfect. But the other one is when I got the harsh goatee or mustache, I kind of looked like Mike Stranz. I didn't realize how big of a stud that guy was.
The late Mike Stranz, unfortunately.
I was like, dude, look at that guy's stash.
I think when you're clean shaven, it's Martin Keimer all day long.
That's a good one. I'll take that.
I think he oils his arms.
He's yeah.
Like, lubes his arms up with oil every time he plays. What about Randy?
I'm trying to rack my brain for like the Slender Men out there.
Chris, I thought it was Kirk Triplett with the bucket.
It could be Kirk Triplett. Little Chess and Hadley vibey. Stuart
you
Hagestad.
Do have a
Chess
and vibe. Yeah. I think Hagestad's a good one too.
I'd say those are probably most in the neighborhood.
I think Chessing with the hair. You kind of have similar hair. Or actually, Ollie with the hair. Schnitter hands.
Yeah.
A little
Maybe
bit.
Chessing with some Ollie hair on top.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech AF.
Yeah, that's God. Know, that's a lot of.
A lot of GT.
I'm down with what Paul Johnson's selling.
All right.
Tron, I got yours. You're Zach Johnson with when you wore used to wear those glasses. Those like remember with the glass you wore to Pasatiempo like years ago when you were
the
like
white the, Oakleys?
I yeah, the white Oakleys.
Sometimes
those had mega Zach Johnson vibes.
Alright, that's disgusting.
Maybe that's the source of Tron's animosity to Zach.
He's looking in the mirror.
Yeah,
he's
just
looking
misplaced.
In the mirror.
Yeah.
I mean, some people, you know, I've been trying to work out a little bit, but it's tough with a little one at home. Some people have been saying it's like Furyk.
Little Furyky, dog. A little Furyk.
Like hospice Furyk or post hospice?
And then, you know, I've also been told I look like back when I had the hair, like I was kind of like a mix of like Jude Law and Adam Scott.
I mean that's high praise. Yeah.
Jesus, he'll take that.
So, you know, hey, I mean it's probably somewhere in the middle.
It's like Jim Furyk, but with some Adam Scott, Jude Law.
I think that's pretty solid.
All right. This has been a while. Anything else we gotta?
Yeah. Good luck editing this one, big guy.
I told him straight drop this and Ziploc that. Right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper.